to pray.
Supervisor D'Amato, a question by David Shaver about Sheila. This young man whose name I have not committed to memory, but I should have. Rick Rogers and Michael Kramer. We are taking great care not to call this a debate, and if we, any of us should lapse in the course of the afternoon, we intend this to be a forum. The forum will open with a statement from each candidate according to the point course. Ms. Holtzman goes first for 3 minutes. After Ms. Holtzman and Mr. D'Amato have completed their opening statements, questions will be taken in order, and they will be addressed to each candidate on the same general subject matter, and the answer will, we hope, be limited to 3 minutes. When the same question has been asked of the other candidate, that was the same question in the same general area, the reporter then has the right to ask up to 2 follow-up questions, whose answers, responses. We have formatted for 1 minute replies. Obviously, we will alternate who responds first and second with each question. Questions that are intended only for one candidate for a special meeting should be saved towards the end of our meeting today, which is scheduled to last for 9.5 hours. At the very end, we hope that each candidate might ask one question of the other candidate, the one question that they would most like to put to their opponent.
Will be looking specifically for record of integrity, and I have that.
jeopardized today as a result of a short-sighted policy, a policy which has unilaterally crippled our military preparedness so that indeed today the peace and security of this nation, of our allies, has been jeopardized. There's been no more articulate scalpel cutter of the preparedness of this nation. There has been no more articulate foe of an adequate military. There has been no more articulate foe for adequate pay for our professionals, for our technical people. And the last time we were together, Ms. Holtzman said her record on defense has been distorted. I say here and now, her record on defense has indeed been distorted by her attempting to say to the people of this nation that she's for a strong military and that she's simply against waste. You cannot be for a strong military if you vote against every single appropriation bill that would make it possible to buy the military materials. Yes, to even go out to bid for the military materials and then say that I'm for a strong defense. You just can't do that. And if I'm wrong, I'd like you to show me where I'm wrong. And when in the last opportunity that we had to submit ourselves and our thoughts to the people of this state, you said that your record was distorted, that you voted for pay raises and appropriation bills. I'd like to know when, I'd like to know where. I'd like to know why on August 26, 1980, when we had the last Department of Defense Authorization Bill, giving an 11.7% pay increase, you were not even there to vote. That passed unanimously. And why on August 26, 1980, when the non-Warren Bill amendment was there to give targeted pay increases to those professionals, to those trained pilots, to those military personnel that we so desperately need today, that you were not there. And that prior to that, on repeated occasions, you voted systematically against those pay increases for nuclear engineers or pilots for tens, and not back in the Vietnam days, but in 1975, and 76, and 74, and 78, and 79, and 80. When we talk about integrity, let's be honest with the public in terms of where our record really is and how we've really voted. I think that we have to give back to working people, the taxpayers, the ability to determine for themselves, not for the bureaucrats, not to slash away at the ability of people to make their own expenditures for themselves and for their family.
Mr. Schaefer, will you address your first question, please, to Mr. Lamar?
They put me all the way down to the end so I could ask this question. And it's really to both of you. Sorry, Mr. Lamar. Neither of you has the reputation of having an overly conciliatory personality. Mr. Lamar, you ran a campaign based in part on attacks on your opponents, your primary opponents, age and health. Ms. Holtzman, you make a regular point of your willingness to compromise on that issue of principle, and you attack one of your primary opponents, integrity. How would you both expect to function in the give and take of the Senate?
Well, I think that it's important that we have a senator in New York who's going to fight the legitimate concerns that are making it impossible for working people and taxpayers who live here in this state, freeing the shackles from those administrators, those mayors and those county executives who have very little in the way of flexibility in determining how they're going to run their municipalities because of the mandate, because of the welfare burden that's placed on us, the Medicaid burden that's placed on us. Here in Westchester County, only better than 50% the county budget will go for welfare and Medicaid. In my county, which is indeed one of the highest taxes in the nation, next year we'll be facing a $250 million tax burden for welfare and Medicaid. We find a situation where we pay more than $20 million annually to the MTA for a Long Island Railroad and the Conrail system. If you live up here in Westchester, it doesn't function simply because our senators, our representatives, have not been fighting to gain for New York its fair share of that mass transit aid. I think maybe in terms of conciliation, there are times to be conciliatory. We're going to give get that burden of welfare and Medicaid off of the backs of local governments, to fight for a flat rate system. Those are the kinds of things you fight for. You don't have the shrill voice and vote, for example, one of 27 that votes against pay increases for nuclear engineers, or 42 who votes against better incentives for key military training people, such as our pilots, who have spent $1 million to train them, and we now have a retention rate of about 25%. We don't have a shrill voice and say, I'm against waste and corruption, and that's why I vote the way I do in terms of the military appropriations, when indeed the colleagues know, and the same colleagues that you're asking for support, that you vote no on every single occasion. And that's why I believe that Al D'Amato can indeed, I'm tough and hard, but effective for the people of the state of New York.
Thank you for that.
I think the question to your answer to me is simple. Truth is in the pudding. It's not a question of promises or hypothetical statements to you about what I will do. Look at what I've been able to do to New York State. In the first place, with respect to the Senate, I have won the endorsements now, the Senator Moynihan. I have won the support of many of the senators, some of whom will be coming into the state
have a litmus test in which you would not vote for a Supreme Court nominee if that person were, for example, against abortion, and by the same token, Supervisor D'Amato, would you have a litmus test in which you would not vote for a nominee if that person were for abortion? Or what are your views on the whole question of nominees to the Supreme Court? Ms. Holton first?
Ms. Holton.
Yes, let me say first that with respect to quality of the Supreme Court justice, having myself been involved in Watergate, having been part of the situation in which the Supreme Court itself played a key role in preserving our democratic society and preserving our Constitution, I am deeply concerned about the quality of the people who are appointed to the Supreme Court. I think we're talking first about quality of the president. We're talking second, and maybe not in exactly the right order, but certainly integrity, intelligence, judicial experience, judicial temperament, exceptional judgment, a person of distinction in the bar, is someone that I would like to see appointed. I don't think there would be a particular test in terms of particular philosophy. And indeed, we've seen people grow on the bench and change perhaps their particular stand on a particular issue. But what you're looking for in a Supreme Court appointee are qualities of character, and qualities of integrity, and qualities of breadth of experience and judgment. But I would like to talk about what a U.S. senator gets to do in terms of employees here in the state. If the senators get to nominate those who will serve as federal judges in New York State, by the way, I helped create, working with Senator Moynihan, the first new judgeship in the Northern District of New York, and created in 50 years. But I think we need, not only does the senator have to get a role in appointing judges, but the senator also has a role in appointing United States attorneys. And I think that's a very key point, because I've worked with United States attorneys in terms of uncovering baby standards in federal programs. And I want to see people who are, and I would be kind of power, to appoint people who will be relentless and ruthless against crime. And whether not only street crime, and not only narcotics, but crime in political places. And those are the kinds of people I want to appoint. And I've got a record of integrity so that people don't have any question about the quality of people that I have the power to appoint them, the quality of those people whom I will appoint. I also think, by the way, that you're thinking about appointing more women, those who bench, the decisions in the United States Attorney, and who support my people.
Now, you've got the same question to
Supervisor
D'Amato. Generally, your thoughts on the Supreme Court nominee?
I think integrity, if you show our temperament, ability, are certainly the key ingredients. Breadth of experience in terms of judicial as well as legal, as well as civic, most important. And I think that there should be no test per se. I think that that's easy to attempt to say, quite an impossible task to say that if one person agrees on one theory or another theory, that they should or shouldn't be considered for the Supreme Court. I think that when we talk about this integrity, I would hope that Ms. Holtzman is not implying that the two senators who have made recommendations now for the past 2 years and 6 years, respectively, Senator Moynihan and Senator Javits, have a lack of integrity, or that their appointments to the various judiciary positions were lacking in quality, stature, or integrity, or that those who were appointed to the U.S. Justice Department as the attorneys are lacking in stature or justice, etc., and I would call to one's mind, and they don't make those appointments. They make various recommendations. They go to, in this case, President Carter, and I would hope that you would not be inferring that the both civil and criminal prosecution arm of the federal government has been painted as a result of either Senator Moynihan or Senator Javits, because I would reject that. And that's the way one comes over when you make this talk about integrity. Integrity is being able to say where one's record is, not saying that I am, you know, for one thing, when the record belies that, I'm likely sliding off. Integrity is saying that if you're really for cutting waste in terms of social spending programs, we don't talk about uncovering a particular small area, but we say, let's go at the roots of it. In June 1979, if I were in Congress, I would have voted for an amendment that would have allowed the Inspector General to identify those programs and those areas where there was waste in HEW, and we would have cut that appropriation by $500 million. That's how you bring integrity into the area, by seeing to it that people carry out their duties and their charges, by seeing to it that you don't build a huge empire that becomes more dedicated to keeping itself. So I believe, yes, in integrity for our judicial system, I think that we have to have men and women of experience and background where we were going.
Can I just ask a quick follow-up question of each of you? I thought I heard you both say in general terms that you felt that there should be no litmus test for the Supreme Court. But just let me ask this pointed question with a speaking yes or no answer. As the right to life candidate, if all of the qualifications were equal, someone
would have asked this of Congresswoman Hall.
Oh, yes. As the ERA candidate, I'll answer. As the right to life candidate, if all of the qualifications were equal, you had a highly qualified person in front of you for the Supreme Court, but that person had written many opinions that favored abortion, would you feel constrained to vote no on that nomination?
Yea or nay?
The area of question is one,
two. No. Just a follow-up question.
I'd have to look at that very, very, very carefully. For example, I have a consideration in terms of the high demand. I would not be considered particularly constrained to vote for someone who were to rule because that person, as a judge, would have to possibly rule again on the constitutionality of the high demand. And I think to that extent, the high demand has been declared to be. I think that is now an underpinning of our jurisprudence system. I am concerned that we'll have that reversed. And I think that would be a consideration. It's not a litmus test per se, but it is certainly a consideration, and it would be in terms of my support or lack of support for that person.
Ms. Hall,
arrangement of that sort. And we have that flat grant system, so that we don't have a situation whereby one state or a group of states becomes the mecca of welfare as in New York. We don't allow a state, for example, if they're going to participate in this system, to pay its core $47 a month, such as Mississippi, or $110 or $120 a month, such as Louisiana or Texas, a little force. How is that area into the Northeast? And that's what's taking place. Because people will see that kind of opportunity to come to themselves over the years that we've had this terrible situation. So number one, relieving that burden will save New York City alone $1.3 billion. A flat grant system will begin to stabilize throughout the country and keep this situation of migrating to one area to the other because of economic benefits and opportunity to exist in other states. So I think that is so very, very important. In terms of assuming, of course, I'm opposed to the Federal Department of Education, which is more